Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, cold Canadian weather leads to a top three finish in the Boston Marathon.
I just felt great. Monday was my day. It was the weather that worked for me, and I executed, and yeah, I'm grateful for it.
Making the best of a miserable day.
What I had on my for pants was just this old pair of not waterproof Champion warm-up pants, and they were way too big, so I had to keep like rolling over the top so that they would stay on. But I didn't want to take them off. Then they were soaking wet, but I still didn't want to take them off because I just had like three-quarter length tights underneath. And I thought, if I take these off, that's like the last bit of protection I have and could end up with hypothermia. So I left them on, and they're pretty funny.
And running Boston for the very first time.
It was surreal. It was huge. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day, despite the weather. And maybe the weather and the circumstances just make it that much more special. Like, I'm just never going to forget that day.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll be joined by Krista Duchesne, who finished third in Boston on Monday, and will share the Boston experiences of other runners. I'm joined now by my colleague Ben Kaplan, the editor and general manager of iRun, with whom I shared Marathon Weekend in Boston. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
You made it home safely from Boston?
Yeah, I just defrosted 2 hours ago.
Yeah. Look, it was a great experience spending the weekend there with you and then going to the start line together. And we endured the elements. We should be proud of ourselves. I saw someone tweet about how we're all legends for doing the Boston Marathon under those conditions. It's a story we'll be telling for a long time. I'm not sure how much longer people are going to be interested in hearing it, but we'll probably keep telling it for many years, right?
to honor the fine running tradition of over-talking your race.
Exactly.
But I got to tell you, the conditions, for whatever reason, I mean, and I think this is why we do it, because it's like every time you get out there, you just never know how you're going to feel, no matter how you train, no matter what you do, no matter what sneakers you're wearing. You know, any given day, your vibe, the way you respond to the course will be different. I think that's what makes it so fun.
And you had a great race, and I've been teasing you ever since it was over. For 2 months, of course, even on this podcast, Ben has been saying, oh, no, you know, I don't want to run fast. I just want to run with you. I want to share the experience. And even a couple of days before the marathon, you were saying, hey, are we going to, like, hold hands and cross the finish line with our arms in the air? And then less than a mile into the race, Ben turns around. He's about 5 meters ahead of me, and he turns around and he says, I think I'm going to run ahead. And I never saw you again. That was it. That was the end of us running together right there. But look, that's the way it has to be. Everybody's got to run their own race. Nobody should be beholden to anyone. And so I'm glad you had a great experience, and you were out there, you know, you were out there in the rain for less time than I was because of that.
You know, I don't know what it was. That was the plan, but you get in there, and they finally, I think we waited for like 3 hours, and in some sense, we waited for 6 months, for us to finally hit that line in Hockington, and then after all of that, you're just like a rubber band, and they finally, you're at that point of tension where they let go of that rubber band, and they just can't stop yourself from flying.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. Let's put it that way. I knew you were going to want to go as fast as you could, but let's talk about the weather for a moment, because you could run the Boston Marathon every year for the next 50 years, and you'd probably never get conditions like that again.
But Mark, I think, I mean, and again, I know Krista's on the show, but like when I did the chilly half, it was so cold that in Boston, despite how horrific that weather was, I've run this winter in worse. Now the rain, and the wind and the conditions were bad, but it's been bad, and the wind, I mean, I've run against stronger wind. And I remember because I so specifically was like, I'm going to take a right turn and get out of this wind. But then I was like, just try. And I just kept going through it. So for some reason, like, I just felt like, and when we went to the Red Sox game before, I was colder at the Red Sox game than I was during the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, well, that's because you were moving, of course, at the marathon. And to me, it wasn't the cold temperatures. It was the rain and running in wet shoes and having all these extra clothes, some of which I never discarded, and all of that. I brought with me throwaway clothes, and I didn't throw them away. I wore them all the way to the finish line, including a rain poncho, a plastic disposable rain poncho that I had gotten on the hop-off bus, tourist bus in London, England. You know, they hand these out on a rainy day so you're protected. And I kept it, and I wore it thinking I would throw it away at the start of the race. I ended up wearing it for the whole 42 kilometers, so I still had that thing on at the finish line. That's the kind of day it was. So, you know, not a day you're going to run your personal best, but as you mentioned, Krista Duchesne is on the show today. What a phenomenal result for her. And I don't think there's any question that the reason she did well and some African runners didn't is because Krista is more used to, more accustomed to running in those conditions.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, it evens the playing field because it's just, we just grit through the Canadian winter.
Yeah.
So then when these comes, well, you know, we're prepared.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I did feel, and there's also that notion too, that like, I got to get out of here. And every step forward is a step out of the rain. So it's like, you know, move your behind and get this thing over with.
Absolutely.
Go somewhere warm.
And hats off to the spectators and the volunteers who were out in big numbers. And I would rather be moving during that kind of weather and burning energy and creating heat than standing still, handing out water, or just clapping for the runners going by. So I have to say a huge thank you to all of the people along the course, the volunteers and the spectators. All right, Ben, thank you so much. We're going to talk to you again next week.
What a weekend. Thank you so much.
That is iRun's general manager and editor, Ben Kaplan, who was my running mate for, well, for the first three quarters of a mile in Boston. Coming up next, Canada's Krista Duchesne, fresh off her third place finish in Boston. Canada's longest running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Canada was well represented at the Boston Marathon on Monday, along with thousands of amateur runners. Olympians Eric Gillis and Reid Coolset were there. Reid finished ninth in the men's race. And of course, in a remarkable performance, Krista Duchesne finished third among women and first among masters runners. Krista, thank you so much for joining us and congratulations on an incredible performance in Boston.
Thanks. It's always nice to speak with you. And now we have another chapter to add to our little book.
Yes, exactly. And look, let's take a step back for a moment, because I remember the last time we spoke, you were talking about how you'd accomplished a lot of your goals, your focus has shifted a little bit, and now you were taking the approach that everything that happens from this point forward is kind of a bonus, right?
Right. I think I maybe said it's the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
I think I'm now saying that the icing keeps getting thicker. I don't know if that's an expression, but it seems to be working.
Sounds good to me. I like a lot of icing on my cake. So tell us a little bit about what you were thinking going into the Boston Marathon, what your plans were, what you were hoping to accomplish before the race and before you heard the weather forecast.
Right, because that's definitely different than what happened the day of. I was hoping that I would go somewhere in the 230s. I knew I wasn't fast enough to go under 230, but I thought I was, you know, in good shape to go under 240. So likely, you know, around 235 would be reasonable on this course. And I had trained for strength and to handle the hills that start later in the race. So doing around the base 30K was a perfect race to prepare me for this. And, so I was confident going into it. My training had gone well, you know, doing a lot of marathon-paced kilometers with Dave in Speed River in Guelph. And, just feeling really good. I had no illness or injuries. Pretty much every time I went to physio and massage, I had to try to think of something they could work on, and there wasn't really anything. And so then got to Boston, and then looking at the forecast, that's when I think a lot of our strategy started to maybe change a little bit.
Yeah, and so what were you thinking then, and what was your goal?
Well, ultimately my goal was top three masters, because, you know, I think I said in the last radio session that if I said, you know, if someone like Dina Castor shows up, I probably don't have a good chance of winning the Masters. And then sure enough, I saw a press release that she was going to do it. So, but in the back of my mind, I thought, I still have to get to the line strong and healthy, and so does she and all the other Masters. So it's fair game. And I thought overall, maybe top 15. I think I was kind of the bottom of the John Hancock elite pool, but then there was a sub-elite pool. So that kind of opens up a little bit more to see who your competition will be. So basically top three masters and top 15 overall, I would have been thrilled with. And then that even changed, you know, once we saw what the weather would be like.
Right. And let's talk about the weather for a moment. Have you ever run in anything like that before, run a race like that?
A race? No. I've run a lot of cold races or windy or rainy, but never all three at once.
Yeah. And we should remind people a little bit about your story. Now, am I right that you did the Boston Marathon before many years ago? Is that right?
Yes. Yes. But, in 2005.
In 2005, but before you were an elite runner, right? And this is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the unique things about your story is you're not somebody who came to this sport, came to elite marathon running because you were successful at middle distance running and you had this great run through high school and college and that kind of thing. Like so many elite marathon runners, you were somebody who was running marathons recreationally and you qualified for Boston and ran it just like anybody else.
Yep, that's right. Exactly. I ran, played hockey, did different sports when I grew up. Hockey was my main one. Went to University of Guelph, put running on the side, got back into running, thought I'd like to do a marathon for fun. Everyone said, oh, you have to do Boston. Qualified, did it. Then we had our three kids. And then I always thought it would be neat to go back as an elite, and doing it as a master's would be good eventually because it doesn't count as, you know, record eligible and you know, trying to break a course record or anything. So it was perfect timing to do it this year being, you know, not a qualifying year or anything. And yeah, to go back as an elite, definitely a different experience, but still that same incredible Boston atmosphere of the marathon.
Yeah. And so what were you thinking about the weather? Were you like many runners, were you feeling like, boy, I hope this forecast changes. This is kind of discouraging. I don't know how it's going to affect me, all of that.
See, I never trained for speed. That was one of the great things about being with Dave, and this is my first marathon training at sea level with him because I'd gone to Kenya last year, was to kind of throw away the watch and listen to your body. So as the weather, as we knew, it was just going to be miserable. I mean, I think everyone that was racing it, you check the weather, and, you know, probably a week ago, it was just consistently showing rain, and it never changed, and it often does. So everyone knew it was going to rain 100%. So, you know, people didn't love that. It was going to be cold and windy, and I thought, you know, this can work for me. So you're looking at the elite list and Dina Castor being my competition. I thought, some of these elite women are not going to like this. It's not going to do well for them, but I can tough it out. I've trained for strength, and I've done, you know, long runs in Canadian winter weather, and this could be something that would work for me. So when we were on the bus, actually, on the way to the start line, I remember looking at the window. I'm like, oh, it's not raining hard enough. I hope the rain starts. This is my strategy for today.
Okay, so you were the one person hoping for more rain and more miserable conditions, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know Reed, he did well in it too, so yeah. I think it worked well for him. Eric, unfortunately, didn't have such a great day, but I think Reed said to him, hey, you do better in the heat and I don't. So, you know, it was really a great weekend hanging out with them because, you know, we're with the same group, me now being with Dave and Guelph, and Eric's coach from St. FX was there, so Jonathan and Bernie were best friends all weekend, and then Reed's wife Marie was there with little Louie, and we just had a really good time as Canadians kind of bonding this weekend, and yeah, it was nice to share our stories, and then Ben interviewed us a few days before the race, and yeah, just a great weekend to be Canadians in Boston, and then of course Toronto was there for the hockey, the playoffs.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think Canada was well represented this weekend.
Absolutely. So tell me how the race went and what you were feeling while you were out on the course. And obviously, you had, as you say, you were well positioned to take advantage of the conditions. And being Canadian, you were used to running in all kinds of different weather. And I think that is one thing that is great about training in Canada. You're not going to get that kind of weather and that kind of experience in so many other places in the world where runners are training.
Right. And my training, I was smart in my training, and I think I did a little bit less busy work this time, less cross training, just focused on getting the quality runs in. I took one complete rest day off a week, which I think worked really well for me. And I'm trying to age gracefully in that, you know, still do the hard work that I need to do, but be wise and let things go that don't necessarily get me toward that goal. So that helped. And, you know, my strategy was to run my race and be strong and be smart. So I didn't want to go out too fast because I know a lot of people go too fast in that, you know, rolling downhill first part of the race and they regret it later. But the first kilometer of the race, we were all together and I was running right beside Shalane and it was over 4 minutes per kilometer. So that's like, you know, jogging for the elite pack. So I thought, well, okay, it's appropriate for me to stay with them because I can handle this. So eventually the pack got a little bit smaller in terms of it wasn't the 40 elite that started. And I did kind of drop off a little bit because I thought, you know, a lot of crazy pacing could happen, surges and that kind of thing. I'm like, I just want to stick with how my body's feeling and just be consistent. So they were in view for quite a while, and then eventually I didn't quite see them, but see, you can see the lights from the motorcycle that accompany them, so that helped.
Right.
So at one point in the race, I could kind of see the lead pack ahead, and I'm like, is that the still the lead pack, and I can see them? That's crazy. And so I almost kind of got up to them, but I thought, no, I'm not going to catch up to them and try to keep up and do this crazy pacing thing. So kind of kept my eye on them. And then I thought I was on my own, to be honest. I thought, okay, the lead pack is dispersed up there. Eventually I'll kind of just make my way and hopefully start picking off one woman at a time. So I did start doing that. And then two American women just flew by me that I didn't know. And I thought, whoa, like they're really flying. And I thought, I've got more to give. Like, I should go with them or keep them in my sight because maybe I could be top 10. So I started to pick up the pace, and then that's when it just got crazy because the lead male was starting to come up. So they come up with the trucks, and they basically say, just stay on one side. Like, they don't want to be hitting people, but right, you know, they've got the men's coverage to do as well.
Yeah, because so people understand, the men start after the women, and then
yes,
they eventually
right,
catch up to some of you and overtake you.
Right. So the sirens and the trucks and the horns and the fans yelling and screaming and the crazy weather, I had kind of this out-of-body experience where it's just like this blur of chaos, but I was still refined and clear and precise in how I was attacking and executing, which was really neat. So I just kept plugging away. My body felt good, kept running. And then the girls ahead of me, those two American women, I could see them kind of pumping their fists. And I thought, why are they celebrating? Like, I mean, this is kind of weird. So I kept watching them. And then all of a sudden, I passed Molly Huddle, who is one of the contenders who potentially for first, one of the top Americans. And I thought, oh, my, this is strange. I'm passing Molly Huddle. What is going on? And then I heard someone say, Shalane is ahead. I passed Shalane. I passed Edna Kiplagat. I passed another African. And that's when I was like, this is crazy. It's this crazy story that's just unfolding right in front of you. So then I just kept plugging away, and then I still saw those two American girls. I'm like, well, I know I can go after them. So I was praying. I'm like, God, just help me beat one of them or two of them. And so I ended up passing the one American woman, and then here I am on Boylston Street, and it's just chaos, the screaming. And then, like, the male was right there, because if you watch the videos with him coming in, you can see my yellow socks. That was me. So, and he had no idea either. He only knew that he won because they direct you one way to go through the tape. So that's the only way he knew that he won. So I'm running through and I'm like, okay, doing my little celebration, cross the line. And then so immediately you're escorted by one of the volunteers, and then doping came. So I had two people with me. And then I asked the man, I said, how did I place? And he couldn't get a connection on his phone. He said, well, I think third or fourth. And I'm like, no, not masters. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that would be great. But overall, he's like, yeah, third or fourth. But he didn't want to say,
right,
just in case he was wrong. So then we went into the medical, and then, like, I was fine running. As soon as I stopped running, I started shaking, and I was cold. They had to take my wet stuff off, and I just kept asking, honestly, like, what place was I in? Do you know? And so then people were confirming and saying, yes, you were third. And then I walked into the room. Well, no one was there in recovery. Well, that's because the only other people would be the male who was out getting his award, and then and then Des, who was getting her award, and then Sarah, the other American girl. So the recovery room was completely empty. Everyone's like, congratulations. And I just kept shaking my head. And then I was in shock, right, because of my, you know, well, not, I was just cold and shaking. And then, so he's looking after me. And then Jonathan came in and I said to him, like, they're telling me I'm third, like they're lying to me. And he didn't know. He just kind of shrugged his shoulders. So he came.
So you still
me.
Don't know for sure at this point what position you finished in. Wow.
No. And it reminded me of when we had our third child. We had two boys and a girl, and I was shaking from having her, being in labor and everything else, and I wouldn't believe it. And I could see her. It's like, she's born naked, right? So I still wouldn't believe she was a girl. So anyways, eventually I recover. I'm walking around. I go over to Dan, who is Eric Gillis's agent, and I said, because we had kind of hung out with him as well, and I said, Dan, like, do you mind, can you show me on your phone? Because someone had showed me on a board, it was written on there, like in writing. And I said, can I just see on your phone? He, sure, he showed it to me. He scrolled in. There you are. And that's when I believed it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a story and what a race. And you looked so, I looked at pictures of you at the finish line. We have one on the iRun website. And you look absolutely soaking wet, but absolutely delighted at the same time as you're crossing the finish line.
Yes. I mean, it's crazy, but I think it's probably... I've never felt so good running a marathon. Because I've run quite a few, I'd have to think back, but
yeah.
I never got to that point where I felt, oh, this is awful. When will it be over? And the fluid and feel like the fuel stations, they just kept coming. Now, my time was slow, for sure. I haven't run that slow in years. I mean, I ran slow last year in London because of my stomach issues, but I just felt great. And it was just that depth I had with my training and being able to handle that. And I completely know that if it was a good day, there's no way I'd have been third. You know, I'm not doing these interviews like, oh yeah, I knew from the beginning. But
you didn't even know after it was over.
Exactly. People have bad days and they can't handle the conditions. I've been there before, world championships in Russia. I collapsed with 23 others. But you know, Monday was my day. It was the weather that worked for me and I executed, and yeah, I'm grateful for it.
Well, congratulations again, Krista. It was such an inspiring performance, and you know how many Canadians were thrilled to see you on the podium in Boston. Well done, and thanks for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure.
That's Krista Duchesne, who finished third in Boston. Coming up next, a runner and a spectator on their Boston experience. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. I'm joined now by Wendy Wagner, who ran Boston on Monday, and Rick Dearden, her husband, who was cheering her on. Hi, guys.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
So, Wendy, let's talk first about your experience. What were you thinking as you heard the weather forecast? We were talking earlier with Krista Duchesne, and you have, I think as runners, we have this compulsion of starting to check the forecast a couple of weeks before, and if the weather's good, it makes us optimistic. If it's bad, we just tell ourselves, oh, there's lots of time for the forecast to change. But in this case, it never did. It just kept predicting rain.
Yeah, I know. You know, even a couple weeks out, I was thinking the weather could be bad just because everywhere sort of in eastern North America has had a really bad spring. So in my mind, I was already kind of prepared for that. So it just confirmed what I was already anticipating. And then I was obsessively checking the forecast right up to the like last minute, hoping that it would change. But as you say, it never did. So I was trying to mentally prepare myself for a different kind of run the whole time.
Yeah, and Rick, what about you? Because I've said this many times, I would rather be moving on a day when it's cold and wet than standing still. And so I have a lot of respect for the spectators and the volunteers who were out in significant numbers on Monday in Boston, because I think it was less fun for them than it was for the runners.
Oh, I have to admit, Mark, that I have no regrets that I was standing there and wasn't running like you guys were doing. It was so wet and miserable and cold that at some point I thought that Noah's Ark was going to come up Heifers and onto Boylston to save you guys, because the torrential downpours that occurred like out of the blue, you know, it would be raining steadily, but all of a sudden it was like someone was taking a fire hose out and just dousing people for 5-10 minutes, and then it would slow down a bit and then it would do it again. It had to be just brutal weather misery for you guys on that course. And I had no desire to be out there moving or not. I was quite happy to go back to my hotel after I saw the elites run past on Boylston and then come back out and watch Wendy go down the last 500 yards to the finish line.
And we should point out that you've done Boston before yourself, right? You've run it as well.
Yes, I've ran it twice as a charity bib, but I ran it in 2012 when it was over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And Wendy and I were actually talking what would be preferable. And there is no doubt in my mind that I'd rather be running in 92 Fahrenheit than what you guys ran on Monday.
Really? Okay. Because I think that's the only...
Yeah.
What do you think, Wendy? Because that to me would be the only thing that would make that would rival that experience. So there are all kinds of different weather you can have. It can be cold, of course. But I think, you know, the heat, if it's hot and humid, that can be not only unpleasant, but it can be dangerous for runners. So I think that would be the only weather that I would say has the potential to be worse than what we went through on Monday.
So I would say it's still not worse, because the way that I would think of it in advance of the race is that in either case, I would throw out my time goal. I wasn't even that upset about this Boston, because I knew I wasn't trained anyways. I wasn't properly trained for it, so I wasn't going for a specific time. So of all years that it could be not nice weather, this was a good year for it to be not nice weather.
Right.
But I think I would feel the same way. Like in either case, I would know there's not going to be any, you know, hitting a certain time on this day. So out of the two, knowing that I wasn't going to hit a certain time, I'd rather have the heat, and at least just, if I'm going to take it as a slow race to enjoy the experience, I'd rather have the heat to enjoy the experience versus what we had to enjoy the experience. And I still did enjoy the experience, but I'd rather do it and get a nice tan.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about what you did experience on the course, and did you just try to make the best of it under the circumstances?
Yeah, like I think I hyped it up a bit in my mind as to how bad it would be, to the extent that it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, at least not at the beginning of the race. I went to the buses really late for my wave, so that was good, because I just got off the bus at Hopkinton, and usually you wait for, you know, maybe an hour to go down to the start line, but I didn't have any waiting time at all. I just walked right down to the start line. And it was, I thought to myself, I kind of had a strategy where I thought I'll run, you know, fairly well in the first half and just kind of get it under my belt. And then from there on, I'll just relax and just, you know, make it through the weather kind of thing. So that seemed to work well, because the first half the weather wasn't as bad. And then, you know, when it got really, really, really bad was in Boston. But by that point, I was just having fun anyways. And, you know, everyone was kind of having a good time and just treating it as it was. And, you know, it was fun from that perspective.
Yeah. And you and I both had the same experience of wearing throwaway clothes for the entire race, which is something I've never done before. I've had clothes before at the start that I've tossed, and I expected to do the same, but I ended up just wearing everything all the way to the finish line.
Yeah, yeah. Mine were pretty hilarious, too, because what I had on for pants was just this old pair of not waterproof Champion warm-up pants, and they were way too big, so I had to keep, like, rolling over the top so that they would stay on. but I didn't want to take them off. Then they were soaking wet, but I still didn't want to take them off because I just had like three-quarter length tights underneath, and I thought if I take these off, that's like the last bit of protection I have and could end up with hypothermia. So I left them on, and they're pretty funny.
Yeah, and I had on a cotton hoodie that I had bought for $7 week before the event, and I managed to actually, I was very lucky about this, I managed to get the hood because I also had on a rain poncho, but the hood of the rain poncho just kept blowing off my head. But the cotton sweatshirt, I was able to pull the hood over the brim of my hat. I had a running cap mm-hmm. on, and it stayed there. So it sort of stayed hooked to the brim of my cap for the whole race. So I was lucky in that sense because it didn't blow off my head, because that would get frustrating after a while.
Yeah, I kind of did the same, but I was lucky with what I was wearing on top because I had an Arc'teryx full waterproof
right.
coat. It wasn't lined, but it's still Gore-Tex material, and it was waterproof. So I had the hood of that, and it cinched, and then I had a baseball hat too. So you had the brim and then the hat on top of that, and so it kept my head, you know, fairly dry, I guess. Nothing was dry. Like, don't get the impression that any part
yeah,
of my body
exactly.
was even remotely dry. But, my head in comparison to my feet, there is no comparison because my feet were just a squelching, sopping mess the entire way.
Yeah. And there was nothing you could do about that, really. And even all the tricks that people had at the start of, okay, I'm gonna bring an extra pair of shoes. I'm sure those were helpful. There were people with plastic bags over their feet at the start line as well. But once you were 2 minutes into this race, your feet and your shoes and socks were going to be soaking wet anyway, right?
Yeah, like I think the extra shoe plan would have been helpful just from the perspective of if you did have a long wait out at Hopkinton, then you would have, by keeping your feet dry, you probably would have prevented getting chilled before you started the race. So it's probably helpful from that perspective, but it didn't make any difference for me because I just, got off the bus and went. And then, yeah, everyone, there was no avoiding. I mean, Boston's roads are old too. So they're really uneven, and there was standing puddles that were, 2-3 inches deep pretty much everywhere. So there was no running around gingerly around the puddles or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Wendy, congratulations on completing the Boston Marathon in some very tough conditions. And Rick, thank you so much for being a spectator. I really have a lot of respect for the people who were out there cheering us on. It really did make a big difference at so many different points along the course. Thank you both for being on iRun Radio.
Thanks, Mark. And congratulations to you too.
Thanks. That's Wendy Wagner and Rick Dearden of Ottawa. Coming up next, another Canadian in Boston. Canada's longest-running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Our next guest is celebrating her first Boston Marathon. Brooke Ripley, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So, congratulations, first of all, on your first Boston Marathon. How did it go?
Thank you, and I feel like it went quite well, considering.
I think that's the word everybody's been using since Monday, considering
yeah.
or under the circumstances and that kind of thing.
Yeah, from the second I stepped outside, I knew it was probably going to be a rough day. I had wet feet from the start. I was cold from the start. There was a couple hours of waiting with everyone in the before the corrals in the cold and the rain. But the atmosphere was so good. The vibe was so good. The people were so good that I just kind of knew from the start it was going to be hard, but a good day.
So tell me, let's go back a bit, how this journey began for you when you qualified for Boston, how you got into running and doing marathons and all of that.
I've been running since about 2010, and this Boston was my ninth marathon. I qualified for Boston on my 7th, which was last spring, and it was a big surprise when it happened. So
a surprise.
I went in. Yeah, I was expecting to do, you know, around a 340, but probably with, you know, even a 340 was an aggressive goal for me. And I happened to slip in at around 338, which was a big surprise, very exciting. And, but I knew that those two, just that 2 minute buffer probably wasn't going to be enough. So I did Erie as my 8th marathon in last September to give myself a bigger buffer. So I managed to get myself about 6 minutes there. And so as of last September, I knew it was pretty much a guaranteed thing.
Okay, good for you. So you had technically qualified with the 338, but because of the cutoff, you probably weren't going to get in. So you went out and did another Boston qualifier with an even better time.
That's right. That's
good
right.
For you.
So when I was running on Monday, I reminded myself regularly, you put in extra effort to get this.
Absolutely.
So enjoy every second of it.
Yeah. As hard as that was to do in the pouring rain.
It was something else.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what running has come to mean for you as you've done all of these marathons and you've qualified for Boston.
Well, it's part of my regular life now. It means a lot to me. Like, my mental and emotional and physical health are all kind of tied into my running. And so I use that as kind of a regular outlet to kind of make sure I'm getting outside, get some fresh air, get some exercise. And also I run with a team in Toronto, Black Toe. And
right.
Most of my friends, my closest friends, happen to be there now. So my running, a big part of my running is also being with them. So they're kind of my family away from my family at this point.
Yeah, there was a great group of people from Black Toe Running in Boston, wasn't there?
I know, they were so good. They were actually, a group of them were planted around mile 25. And I felt like it took forever to get there. But when I saw them cheering and I knew I just had one more mile to go, it was just the best.
Yeah.
They really were troopers because I was happened to be the slowest person on the team running. And so it was a bit of a long wait for me to come along after the rest of the team had passed. So, but I just loved that they waited. It was so awesome to see their faces. So.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much of a boost that can give you. I didn't know anybody who was cheering along the course, or at least I didn't see anyone I knew, but there were a couple of people with a Canadian flag that I saw a couple times, and that gave me like just a little bit of extra energy. And then there was a stretch where it was just really noisy, not Wellesley, which is always really noisy, but another stretch. And I got goosebumps, and it just made me stride a little faster. So it does make a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it makes a huge difference. Knowing that they were going to be there waiting for me kept me moving. And also in general, I usually run with music, but Monday happened to be like such an overwhelming day with the rain and the wind and there was hills. So I actually turned my music off for most of the race and really tried to pay attention to like the crowd for motivation. And the Boston people were wonderful. I had people telling me that how proud they were. Boston's proud of you. Keep going. This is like the least you've got. You know you've got more. And with so much sincerity, it really was touching.
Yeah. And there were people saying thank you for running the Boston Marathon. And I felt like saying I should be thanking you. So what about the whole weekend? Tell me a little bit about what it was like soaking up all the atmosphere of marathon weekend in Boston.
Oh, the expo was huge. I loved that. I spent a little bit too much money, but it was totally worth it. And I like to just kind of walk around and see what I see without much of a plan. So I did a lot of walking over the weekend. I managed to fit in a Red Sox game, which was really great. And yeah, most of my time is just spent walking.
And tell me about the race itself. Obviously, the conditions were not ideal, to say the least. It was pouring rain, it was cold, it was windy. But what was the experience like for you?
You know, I've just never run a race like that because of the crowds of people that were actually running with me. And like you say, the rain and the wind, it was almost surreal how intense the day was. But, you know, from the start, I was in the crowd. There's people around me, people cheering the whole time. So even though you're kind of doing it alone, you're not really alone. And, you know, when I think back about the day, there's so many parts that kind of make me laugh. Like, you could kind of hear as you were running was there's cheers, but from the runners, there was like flapping noises from garbage bags in the wind that people were still wearing, like from yep. start to finish. I remember going into the finish line, there was a woman ahead of me still wearing the shower cap that was probably meant to be a throwaway hat from the beginning. And, you know, all vanity was gone. It was just like we were out there soldiering through. People were just trying to get it done. And I just love that.
And were you happy with your time, even though it wasn't an ideal kind of race day to run a good time?
My training was a touch off this season, so I already knew it probably wasn't going to be a PB, which is actually a first for me because every marathon I've done, I've managed to squeak out at least a 30-second PB. I think that's the minimum PB I've ever earned, but every marathon I've done, I've always gained just a little bit of speed.
Wow. Every marathon you've run has been faster until now.
Up until Boston.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's okay, so, though. That wasn't going to go on forever, right?
Yeah, no, it wasn't going to go on forever. And I'd say Boston, I mean, I knew going in it was going to be a slower race. And just, I mean, it was such like a milestone event that I don't mind at all. It was just, I mean, I'm not, at this point, I'm not positive if I'll ever get back, but I hope so one day, and I'm just going to kind of try to keep working and see if it's in the cards.
So did you relish running the Boston Marathon? What did it mean to you to have done it, and how did it feel when you crossed the finish line of your first Boston Marathon?
It was huge. Honestly, I'm like not a super fast runner, but I've been working really hard to be consistent with my running. And so when I qualified last spring, it was a huge shock. And then gaining that little bit of time for the buffer last fall, I couldn't even believe it. And so, like, on Monday when I got to race the whole day, it was surreal. It was huge. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day, despite the weather. And maybe the weather and the circumstances just make it that much more special. Like, I'm just never going to forget that day.
Well, good for you, Brooke. It's quite an accomplishment. Not everybody gets to do it, and certainly very few people will get to do it on a day quite like that one. So congratulations.
Yeah, that's right.
And thank you. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
That's Brooke Ripley, who's a member of Black Toe Running in Toronto. Coming up on next week's show, how one running t-shirt can feed a child for a month. And what is plogging? It's running and cleaning up the neighborhood at the same time. We're going to tell you more about that. I hope you can join us on next week's show. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.